Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Congressman Peter Welch, much to do about the Keystone Pipeline. What's your take on this? I know you're against it, but why?
Well, two reasons. Number one, we really do have a climate change issue. And this is very dirty oil that's coming down. It is way more polluting than just about anything else we burn. Second, this pipeline is about just having that oil pass through our country. It's not going to be used in our country. It'll just be brought to Texas and exported. And number three, we have a process by which these pipelines are considered for the environmental impact, and this is being completely bypassed by Congress, acting like it's a zoning board. And then fourth, there's a provision in there that is really astonishing to me. We exempt a foreign company, TransCanada, from the obligation that we impose on all American companies to contribute to environmental cleanup funds in the event, and we always know what will happen, there is a spill. So why are we giving special exemption to a foreign company from an obligation that we have all our American companies pay? So this is a bad idea, and I oppose it. It'll pass in the House and Senate. It's really kind of a political agenda item for Speaker Boehner and Senator McConnell. But the president's indicated he'll veto it, and I expect that veto will be sustained.
They don't have the votes to override?
They don't have the votes to override. And by the way, the economics of this are really changing. Mm. There's a lot of folks who think that that oil up there is going to be a stranded asset. You know, it's a very expensive technology they have to use to recover it. It's not only carbon intensive and dirty oil, but it's very expensive to get out of the ground. And a lot of economists say that unless oil is in the range of 80, 85 bucks a barrel, it's not economic to get that oil out of the ground.
And why can't they ship it to Canadians from where they are?
Well, they can. I mean, they'd have to build their own pipeline or send it across their own territory. So that's an option for them. So they can do it if they want.
And what about the refineries? Somebody said to me that we have the refineries and they don't, and that's why it has to go through the United States. Is that legitimate?
Bottom line, I think it's economical for them. You know, if you're TransCanada, your business plan is to get the tar sands oil out and to ship it. It's a cheaper way to do it if you get the U.S. To build the pipeline. So sure, from an economic standpoint, bottom line concern, if your basic concern is the profits of TransCanada, then the pipeline is for you.
As long as we're on the subject of oil, let me pick your fertile mind about something else. The Saudis let the price of oil go down. It seems intuitively that it's against their own interest to do that. But at least one analyst I heard, which made great sense to me, says that the reason that they're doing it is that they're helping the Americans get even with the Russians for their bad behavior in Ukraine. So if that is the case, then what's the quid pro quo for the Saudis?
Well, first, I don't know if that is the case or not, because other economists are saying that Saudis are fighting for market share. And there's a lot of pressure in the oil patch now. I mean, this has been devastating for a lot of companies that have borrowed hundreds of millions, billions of dollars to start drilling and drilling and drilling. And those are on economic rigs now. So whether that geopolitical concern that you're talking about is true, or it's just Saudis thinking they like to let the price go down, they'll be the last producer standing, and then they'll be able to raise prices. I don't really know.
That's fascinating. One of the things that scares me the most about the way in which we do our international relations is we have a so-called democracy, but we don't know what deals, as Woodrow Wilson might have put it, are being secretly arrived at.
Well, it's true. I got to tell you, though, I think the president has been pretty good on foreign policy by and large, because the huge mistakes that we've made really the invasion of Iraq based on false pretenses. That was not so much made on the basis of secret deals. It was based on the ideological blinders that were on the neoconservatives and President Bush, and just a totally witless response to 9/11. I mean, 9/11 was terrible, and we had to have a response to it, and a serious and aggressive military response. but it came from Afghanistan. It didn't come from Iraq, and Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with it. And then the president just made this case that turned out to be bogus, that there was a weapons of mass destruction. So, you know, there's always a lot of conspiracy talks in foreign policy, and there's a lot of things going on that none of us know about, including if you're in Congress. But it's you don't have to be a rocket scientist. You can be somebody in Bennington or in Albany with pretty good common sense and say, wait a minute, 9/11 came from Afghanistan. What's this thing about Iraq? And, you know, a lot of everyday Vermonters and upstate New Yorkers asked that question at that time, and politicians got led by the nose into a very bad decision.
So I can't but then help ask about the use of force against ISIS, which the president is now asking for congressional approval for. Are you afraid this is going to be the same old, same old?
Well, I have concerns, and I know the president has concerns. I'd say two things. Okay, number one, there is an ongoing military operation there. It's limited. It's air power that's being used. And what the president is doing in coming to Congress for an authorization is acknowledging that Congress has a role to play. And I have been one who's been very critical of Congress failing to act and just stand on the sidelines while we engage in ongoing military operations. So it's a good thing that the president is sending something over that's now going to force Congress to debate it. But then the second question, and this is, you know, really the essential question, what does our national security require? And I think there's two things. One, in that region with enormous instability, we want to do everything we can to protect the homeland against, A, a safe haven attack from there, and, B, the infiltration by jihadists who want to come to the U.S. or to Europe and do violence. And that's where our Homeland Security Department is so essential. So that's really the heart of the question. Then the U.S. has to be in a supporting role to try to build stability in that region. And this is not something in the long run that's going to be resolved by some interventionist occupation force a la Iraq or Afghanistan. So I'm a skeptic of the use of big-time military power in the region to try to bring stability to what is chaotic right now.
No, we only have a minute left, but I want to ask you real fast. I was encouraged when I saw the Jordanians stepping in, which nature abhorring a vacuum. Every time we go in, that's somebody else sitting on the sidelines saying we don't have to do it.
Well, see, that's exactly right. And if you notice, they came in, and then it's not U.S. against Islam. There's a big fight here between the Sunnis and the Shia. There's a big fight between radical fundamentalists and modernists and secularists in the region. And where you had the Jordanians come in, that is enormous stepping up on their part to protect themselves in the regional interest. And we saw another example of where this worked when ISIS was starting to march on Erbil in Kurdistan. In the Kurdish Peshmerga, they've got a competent army. They pushed back, and they fought. So they had a stake in the outcome. And the Kurds, of course, were fighting to protect that area that they have control over. So having folks in the region take responsibility for the future, then that puts us in a position to be helpful. But we can't be the ones that solve the problems that go back centuries.
I always like talking to Congressman Peter Welch, Democrat at large in Vermont, because, Peter, you know so much, and I always learn something from you, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
When we come back, guess what I want to talk about? I'll give you a hint. Netanyahu.